Welcome into the Sports Objective. Very special night as we have a good friend of ours on, David Glenn. First of all, want to bring in Kyle from Grange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, guys? As we sit here in Mars, of course, what everybody wants to talk about as we get ready, as we head into WrestleMania season.
That's right. DG's a huge wrestling fan. We can talk life, anything with David Glenn, of course, The Athletic, formerly of the David Glenn Show, and hopefully we can get some breaking news at some point about his next adventure. We'll talk about that and much more. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, gentlemen. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, I would love to get your crystal ball out and be able to talk about that everything's going to go perfect with the tournament. I know you've been up all hours of the night getting prepared for the tournament, knowing how many positives there are. And, of course, I know that that's not the case that with the COVID world we live in. I always talk about it's a pencil world now and not the pen, inked and pen anymore.
That's so true. And I don't have all the numbers, but I can tell you that after almost 10,000 tests in the Indianapolis area, the number of positives was in single digits.
Like eight, right?
So that's really, really good, at least at the start. Of course, the ACC tournament also started well and had to have some vacated games that led to byes. So we'll see. I mean, no matter which teams you're rooting for, when I see people work their tails off for 4 months or 5 months and you get to what is basically the promised land of your sport, college basketball, the last thing I want to see is anybody sent home because of contact tracing. So may the best team win. And this year we just have to keep our fingers crossed that, you know, all the teams are just, they have enough healthy bodies to play.
You know, one thing I wonder about DG, we're in most here in North Carolina, we're at level four right now for vaccinations, and level five means everybody. I would imagine other states are very similar. Could we not allocate enough vaccines for the NCAA tournament? And you know, of course, it would still be left up to the players, but I imagine most people would have went ahead and got them.
I think so. Maybe the NCAA, the timing is so delicate, right? Because if you just go back several weeks, there was not an overflow of vaccines. And the way I understand, the greatest protection of your vaccine takes a few weeks to really kick in after, for example, your second dose in the ones that require two doses. So it's not, it goes in your arm and the next day you're bionic and, you know, less vulnerable. There is a gap. And I think the NCAA probably, which loses so many public relations battles and is so often painted as the bad guy, I think at a time when vaccines were slower rolling out, to ask for special treatment, I think would have been a controversial topic, and they would have had to ask for it far enough ago. It would have been, what, early February, when there just was not this level of vaccine available. So it's easier said than done, I guess, is the bottom line.
We needed that Johnson & Johnson vaccine to come out about a month earlier, because as soon as that hit the market, everybody wants to wait for it. We'll wait for the one shot.
My wife already's gotten that one. I'm one into the two-dose version. My wife's one and done. She's ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, whoever, the bottom line is the Johnson & Johnson with the Pfizer, with the Moderna. I know way too much about COVID. I want to learn about something else, my friend, with my day job. And I'm really tired. I would love to talk sports without talking COVID-19 with you, and I can't wait to that moment. Having said all that, I do know for a fact that the East Carolina athletes are getting, and all the staff have been getting their shots at the Greenville Convention Center with Vidant and with all the entities there, the city of Greenville. That's one thing I'll say. Government has worked very well together, which normally I am not a pro-government guy, but they actually have done a nice job together. As one ECU guy that you know actually very well said it best, is that the very fact that we have Disney has nothing on the convention center, how smoothly man, he got in and out very quick. And so anybody that says that it's better than Disney, I said, hey, man, that's a huge compliment.
Hey, once you start seeing the Chick-fil-A drive-through analogies, that's another good sign, right?
Exactly.
That's about as well-oiled a machine as you'll see in the fast food world. So shout out to Chick-fil-A and shout out to the state governments that took a while, but they're getting it right now.
And DG, by the way, we have, for those that want to put up comments for DG questions, you can do that on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And we have Richard Allsbrook who is chiming in. He said, great guest. I missed the DG radio show. My daughter Julia was one of David's interns.
Intern Julia, I remember her. She was an outstanding intern.
No doubt. I'll tell you one thing, DG, very happy with the baseball team with East Carolina. Tough night down in Wilmington last night. But Pirate fans, I just want to tell them while we have a live show, there are 56 ball games. And as you know, being a pitcher, David, you're not going to win every single game. I can't imagine a team to go 56-0 in baseball. That's unheard of. And yes, the problem is that unfortunately it was Wilmington, a huge rival team. And that's the one that last year, of course, the circumstances were it's a walk-off. And then next thing you know, your season's ending.
Well, let's see the NC State line, David. It's pretty simple. We're a top 10 baseball team right now. We're number 9 in the country. And to quote our friends in Raleigh, it's their Super Bowl.
I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
Hey, it's funny. When you talk about that matchup, I'm teaching at UNC Wilmington now. So they've given me all this Seahawks gear. I'm also, of course, a parent of an ECU student. So we've been a member of Pirate Nation for 4 years. I just visited my son in Greenville just yesterday. So I've got plenty of Pirate gear, too. So I'm not even sure. I guess I straddle the fence when those two get together. But it is fun to see ECU, regardless of a single game's turnout, as you said, Dave. This has been a down year for our state in men's basketball. And it is not going to be a down year for our state in baseball. So as we're in the process of making that transition, three teams from our state in the big bracket is embarrassingly low. The lowest I've ever seen is 2, and that almost never happens. So, of course, Duke didn't make it this year. App State came out of nowhere to win the Sun Belt. UNC Greensboro has been very good under Wes Miller, so they're in. And the Tar Heels, of course, made it. But only one team from our state representing the ACC. That's incredibly rare. And when you turn the page to college baseball, ECU is really good. Carolina's pretty good. NC State is pretty good. Duke is pretty good. Wake is solid, and others. So there are going to be times where I think we have 6 teams in our state in the baseball top 25, and I think that's already happened.
Yeah, we could have an insane amount come regional time when you factor in Wilmington potentially winning the Colonial. Charlotte could win Conference USA this year. They're good. I mean, it could be a ridiculous amount of teams in the regionals come June.
No, everybody says this is a basketball state, David. Can we say it's a baseball state now with a down year this year right now?
I've always thought we're a baseball state in large part, and especially where y'all are located. If you go east of I-95, and we're such a big, beautiful, diverse state that I learned with my statewide show over 11 years, what people wake up thinking about near the Tennessee border is often different than what people wake up thinking about in the sports world near the Atlantic Ocean. It's not like we're just one monolithic 11 million people or whatever we are in North Carolina. So I have noticed over the years, for example, that, you know, the Hurricanes in hockey have an incredibly strong following in the Triangle, but not so much in other parts of the state to varying degrees. And, you know, App State, of course, has the most fans out west, and ECU has the most fans in the east. And in terms of culturally, sports-wise, Eastern North Carolina was a hotbed of baseball when I got to North Carolina in the late 1980s. It still is today. And given that our state doesn't have a Major League Baseball team, the way we have an NBA team and an NHL team and an NFL team and NASCAR and pro golf and other things, I think the spirit for college baseball and to a degree the spirit behind high school baseball is really, really, really strong here. Even if we don't have, a single major league team to root for, there's a whole lot of fans of the Orioles or the Nationals or the Braves, obviously. Maybe someday we'll kind of complete the sweep and have a Major League Baseball team here as well. We have the MLS on the way, so we've got almost all the biggies. But culturally, we are a great baseball state, and you see that every year when there's the professional draft. Our high schools and our colleges pump a lot of talent into pro baseball.
And, GG, by the way, you remember the commissioner a few years ago has Charlotte with expansion. Of course, they've got to deal with, and we'll move on to – we have a question for you, so I will move on to basketball, college
yes,
basketball.
Yes, can y'all hear me?
Yep, we can hear you fine.
Okay, I got interrupted here. I'm doing this on my phone, and I had got a phone call. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're glad you're back with us. We're doing a live show. DG, as far as they have Charlotte, I know Mexico City, Montreal. There was three cities that he mentioned.
Yeah,
Rob Manfred did, and obviously they're going to pick two cities for expansion. But of course, as you know, Tampa Bay and Oakland, with their stadium situations, he said they had to handle that first. I think that was like maybe 3 years ago. He said it would probably be like more like a decade before they could really look at expansion for two teams. And I feel certain, based on listening to the David Glenn show with population, that Charlotte is a not only exploding with population, but if you look at the, as you've talked about before, so I'll give you credit for it, it's not me, but the geography fits perfect for Charlotte to get the team.
It does, and there's a lot of baseball fans there. I know people in the triad have always said, hey, just give us a Major League Baseball team somewhere here in the Greensboro area. And that way, all those, you know, the multi-million population of the Charlotte area can drive north and see, and the multi-million population in the triangle can drive west to see. I don't think it'll work out that way. And it's a shame that the timetable is much longer, because when the Charlotte Knights, which are one of the best AAA franchises in the whole country, no exaggeration, the Durham Bulls and the Charlotte Knights are two of the best, most beautiful minor league stadiums in the country, period. And it's a shame that when they built that downtown ball, or they call it Uptown Charlotte, that when they built that ballpark for the Knights, if the timing had been just a little bit better, it's hard to get that kind of acreage in the downtown / uptown area of a major top 25 city like Charlotte. So what they got is plenty good for AAA, but they would need a different stadium for Major League Baseball. And that's going to take a whole lot of money and political willpower and taxpayer support. And I don't know when or if that's going to happen. But it's fun to think about, because it feels like we have virtually everything else that there is to enjoy in the sports world.
Yeah, as Dave, you or DG, you mentioned Carolina Hurricanes. Funny story real fast. You talk about different people that are part of the states, and they're following in Raleigh versus the rest of the state. My wife and I have a really close friend, a young female in her late 20s. We went to one of her friend's house, another young female in her late 20s, down in Moorhead a few weeks back. And we walk in, you know, just 20-some-year-old girl living by herself, and there's Hurricanes memorabilia all over her house. And just not something you expect. I asked her how she became a Hurricanes fan living in Moorhead, being a single girl, just loves hockey. So it's kind of weird how particularly she grew up with it. We're in the first generation now of people in their 20s that grew up with the Carolina Hurricanes being in North Carolina. So just interesting, I thought.
Yeah, true. And remember when the Canes first transplanted from the old Hartford Whalers to here, because the arena in Raleigh was not ready yet.
Right.
They played in Greensboro in those early years. And there are a lot of – right. There, even though that is probably a 90-minute drive in each direction, there are to this day a lot of Canes fans in the triad where, you know, it's hard to be a season ticket holder, I would imagine. That's a whole lot of back and forth. But, yeah, I know North Carolinians who live at the beach. I know Caniacs in Wilmington. Yeah. So it's been fun to see. You're exactly right. There's an audience that did not exist 15 to 20 years ago for the Canes that does exist as the next generation comes up, and they're just used to hockey in a way that we were, you know, thrilled and but also shocked to get it 20 plus years ago.
And the fact, DG, the very fact that it comes down to one thing is putting a winning product on ice with the Canes doing very well, the new ownership. Things are going. There was a 9-year drought. You know, I talk to Pirate fans all the time with Coach Mike Houston. I said, please give him a chance. I said, you know why? Because if you're a Canes fan, you went 9 years without the playoffs. 9 long years that some of our friends, including yourself, you have to talk about a hockey team that is not even making the playoffs when half the teams make the playoffs. And with Raleigh being such a great metropolitan area with a triangle, and you have the fan support. But if you're those of us who live an hour and a half away from Raleigh, speaking, I live an hour and a half east of Raleigh. It's hard to go to a game and spend the money, and you have children and they have school the next day and all those kind of things. And then you're going to go up there and the team's going to lose. I mean, you know, the chance. So I know that doesn't sound like I'm a great fan, but it's the cost of it. The financial piece of things is a biggie, and the time spent to and from the arena.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, you know, I had a triangle specific show for about a decade before we went statewide. And when we were triangle specific, you had to talk about the Canes, whether they were good or bad or in between, because you were in the triangle. One of the nice things about the statewide show was if the Canes were down, you just talked about them a little bit less because maybe the Panthers were up, or maybe ECU had a great year, or App State had a great year, or the Tar Heels or the Blue Devils were great, or whatever. We're such a big, diverse state that it was easier to sort of deal with those long Canes droughts with a statewide show than it was when I was on only in the triangle, because that's a whole set of different circumstances and a very different audience. And there were times where you're kind of looking for things to talk about with the Canes because everybody gets tired of talking about losing.
DG, I'll tell you something nobody's talking about, and I think it's going to put to bed what has been a stupid discussion, a stupid suggestion for people over the last 10 to 15 years. Nobody's watching FCS football or paying it any attention right now, like, with the apologies to the fans of those particular schools. It's not on TV anywhere. You can't find it. It's on ESPN Plus at best, or stuff I don't even know what it is. Pluto. What is Pluto? I've seen some games from Pluto, not the former planet. So that put to rest the discussion of moving FCS and so-called Group of Five football to the spring for additional exposure, because guess what? It ain't getting no exposure. Nobody, I guarantee you, there's somebody out there listening right now that just realized with me saying this that FCS football's going on.
And high school football to boot.
You're right. There's a bunch of big decisions that have to be made, because unless the FBS playoff expands, there are people who believe that those beyond the Power Five should have their own playoff to generate attention and interest. And then there's the other, you know, move it to the spring. You have different competition, but the almighty sport in this country is the National Football League, and right. College football in this state and much of the country is right there in the top three, sometimes second. So your point is well taken. If you can avoid being in the same portion of the calendar as those two super heavyweights, you still have to deal with college basketball and the NBA and the NHL in the spring, obviously. But it's a conversation worth having. And now that they're trying it right now, I think it becomes a more realistic conversation for down the road, because they know what it feels like and tastes like and sounds like. And maybe they'll learn something about whatever level of attention they'll be able to get from TV partners and fans, too.
I think it's a conversation not worth having the other way around. I think this proves nobody's going to pay it any attention. So, I mean, I think if you take so-called Group of Five football and FCS football away from the fall, what you're doing is taking away part of your audience that's going to watch Power Five football. Because I'm going to tell you something. If East Carolina's playing in the spring, I'm not going to watch Alabama or UNC or anybody else. And you're taking – because even though we're a part of it, even though we're technically not a part of it, we're still a part of it.
Yeah.
And when you separate us, is a huge mistake. And I think right now, like I say, it goes to show nobody's paying any attention. Nobody's watching FCS football. So I think it should end those discussions, but we'll see.
Well, they're drawing conclusions as we speak, because they're going to find out if more people were watching, and they're going to find out if it hurts recruiting. And so instead of it being a hypothetical conversation, it's now a real conversation, and they're getting some data back. And we all know this, most people are creatures of habit. And one of the most stressful things going on among sports executives and TV executives right now is how the pandemic changed human habits. because there are people who took whatever out of their routine, whether that's going to Dowdy Ficklin or Carter Finley or Keenan Stadium, you know, X number of times every fall, rather than talking about whether or not they would miss it. They now know how much they missed something, right? Because sports were taken away from us for 6 months. And some people aren't going to be as diehard sports fans as they were previously. And some people are going to think twice before they renew an expensive season ticket package. So I think most TV executives hope that people get back to their old habits. But we're learning all the time that younger people are not as enamored in as large numbers with watching sports on TV, for example, as our generation is, or those older than we are, the way they've done it. So it's fascinating. I mean, something like the NFL and college football is so powerful and so popular at the highest level that they can make mistakes and get away with it. But the less prominent sports or their lower levels of football, they have to be really careful, as you said, about making some of these decisions that get people out of the habits they were in. You could become more irrelevant or less relevant than you used to be.
DG, that very fact of the group of five, I think it's a terrible, this whole thing is a huge mess that college football, the powers that be, have created for themselves. I truly believe if they got their act together, they could be the number one sport in America. But the reason why the NFL gets it right is because they look at my wonderful Washington football team. They were terrible this year. They won the division.
You going to try for the cheerleading squad, Dave?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Don't get me started on that. But the very fact that they were a terrible team, they won the division. If you win the division, you're in the playoffs. If East Carolina goes 12-0 with Mike Houston, which they can do because he's a great coach, they never have a shot. So that's the problem, is there is an elitism. There is a problem with at least college basketball does get right with their tournament. And I give them credit for that. They have their own problems that we can definitely talk about. And we have a question from Johnny Gardner here in a second. But that very fact with Power Five, Group of Five, has been a dumb thing. And actually, DG, they can make more money. And the executives for ESPN, ABC, oh, by the way, can make more money because there would be more games if you have an expanded playoff.
Well, I think it's coming. I don't think it's going to come, that expanded playoff, until the conclusion of the current contract, which I believe still has at least maybe 4 or 5 years to run. But what's going to happen is this. A lot of people forget that the reason university presidents and chancellors went from decades of saying there is never going to be a playoff in the FBS level of college football, they've had philosophical reservations, and it's a violent sport. And it's even more violent at the highest level of football than it is at that FCS level or the Division II level. And we're just not going to put that extra burden on these student athletes. We heard that for decades. And then the economic downturn, and I'm not kidding when I say this, the economic downturn of 2008 caused so many beam counters and financial experts at the university level to look at declining endowments and less money available for athletics and everything else. And the next thing you know, in that financial crisis aftermath, those same university presidents and chancellors that were saying, heck no, no way, said, how much will you pay us for that college football playoff again? And all of a sudden, they turn on a dime. And the next thing you know, we have a four-team format. Well, guess what? We're in the midst of another crisis right now. And a whole lot of universities and a whole lot of athletic departments lost a lot of money because of COVID. As a member of the sports media, I can tell you, I'm not exaggerating, the same jobs that I would be paid X for, I am being offered one-third of X for. And I mean, these are from big companies. That's a reflection of the fact that they have been hit hard. And when that hit hard trickles down to the university level, those same presidents and chancellors are going to say, how much were you willing to pay us to expand all the way to 8 teams again? And at some point, they're going to say yes to that. And it is going to be a more fair system, a more inclusive system, and I think a better system. Because as you said, when everybody, the last place team in the worst Division I men's basketball conference still enters its conference tournament saying, hey, man, if we shock the world, we get the auto bid, right? You could be the 330th, you know, the dead last, whatever that number is. It's in the 300s. Theoretically, you have an avenue to the national championship as the 320-something. Mm. And, no, we're not going to have that in college football, obviously, but we need something better.
No, it's
1983.
To me, it's a simple answer. You know, if we're going to eight, you take your five Power Five champions, you take your highest ranked champion from the group of five, and then two at larges.
I agree.
You have an 18 playoff.
Boom! Sign me up right there. That is my format as well.
Yeah,
and you know, they still argue about the two at large and upset a lot of people, and you know, someone would
that'll help us.
Yeah, you know how it goes. There's still going to be controversy, but that kind of controversy is actually good.
Yeah.
Because it raises awareness and gets people all fired up. And then people are curious. What would that undefeated Cincinnati team do against so-and-so champion of this Power Five? That raises interest. So I think.
Well, they had Georgia beat.
I really do.
Yeah. They had Georgia beat. And Luke Fickell's a great coach, but poor clock management was the only reason they lost that football game.
No doubt. Let's switch gears now. And Johnny Gardner, one of our listeners and viewers, DG, your thoughts on what Coach Dooley did to try and turn the tide this year with ECU basketball?
Steps in the right direction, but a long way to go, right? I do know this, a player that I know really, really well, the record on the court was not as good as they had hoped, obviously, but a player named Winston Tabbs from Boston College is transferring to ECU. And I'm telling you, I've watched the guy closely. He was injured 1 year, but before the injury and then this past season, he had all ACC ability. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. And the ACC, not this year, obviously, it's not the best league, not even close. But many years, it is the best league. Yeah. And if you can be an all ACC candidate, you can do just as well in the AAC. So that he's a little bit of a volatile personality. You know, Coach Dooley is going to have to harness his high-end talent, but he is a huge addition to the Pirates. And we all know you got to get players. Jaden Gardner is a superstar player, but he needs more help. And if you can get several players the caliber of a Gardner, well, now you're rising the ladder in the AAC.
Really, one player like that with Jaden having another year, I mean, is that kid going to be eligible? The kid from BC, is he eligible next year?
I'm not certain off the top of my head, but there's ongoing legislation that is going to allow everybody a one-time transfer without a penalty option. Every college student in every sport would be allowed to switch one time without a penalty, regardless of whether they were a grad transfer or whatever, or a conventional transfer. And I think that's coming. So I'd have to double check to see if he would be eligible either way, but I think he's going to be eligible for the Pirates one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't like that rule, but in this case, obviously, it would benefit us. So, hey, I like it. No, I don't like the rule regardless. But I think it's going to create more havoc with people transferring. But the point is, it's not like football. One basketball player can make a difference. And
for sure.
You put him on the court with Jaden, you know, if he can keep the attitude in check, that could be a difference maker.
One thing that we have, the biggest problem we have, DG, is three-point shooting. The three-point shooting the last 2 years is the elephant in the room. So that's what we need is guys that can, you know, as much as I love the front court, the perimeter is where the game is, that dictated, I think, by the NBA. But the three-point shooting is where the game is at. And when you don't have three-point shooting, there's so many games Kyle and I have talked about, and Bubba, that we're so close to winning the game. If you make two or three more threes, you win the game. And we don't make the threes, you're not going to win the game. I mean, it's just that simple.
Well, look at it this way. You know, why has Carolina struggled this season? They made the tournament, but this is a down year by Carolina standards. There have been many UNC teams where they had four different guys who could hit threes. On that 13 scholarship roster, there was one guy who could hit threes. He was freshman Kerwin Walton. And guess what? When you have only one guy who consistently hit threes, defenses are aware of that, and they start, you know, getting in that guy's grill on the perimeter. Duke, similarly, like Carolina, young guards, not as much three-point shooting. Duke also was horrible at defending the three-pointer on the perimeter. So your point is well taken, Dave. Your script there unfolded in Durham in such a bad way that the Blue Devils missed the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1995, and it came darn close to jeopardizing Carolina's season. So you need good guards. And when you have freshman guards, the way the Blue Devils had two on the court a lot, the Tar Heels had two on the court a lot, it can be a roller coaster. And no matter what their age is, yes, at some point you got to hit threes, because beating people going 2+2+2+2 while giving up 3+3+3, man, that's a tough road.
DG, I'm going to have to drop out here. I have something I have to do. But before I go, would you quickly tell me your prediction for the Final Four, and then give me a Cinderella to watch?
Yeah, my championship game is kind of chalky, so because I have number one seed Gonzaga beating number one seed Illinois. I really believe they are the two best teams in this field. They are absolutely loaded with college-caliber talent and pro-caliber talent. Gonzaga has three All-Americans in their starting lineup. So I think this is the year Gonzaga, which, remember, was runner-up to Carolina 4 years ago. This is Mark Few's other best team. So I know 15 years in a row he kind of made the tournament but didn't get past the Sweet 16. But more recent years he's had some Elite Eights and then that national runner-up. I think this is the year Gonzaga kicks the door down. And then I don't know if they would count as sort of dark horses or Cinderellas. But I like a 3 seed in Texas. I like a 4 seed in Purdue. So I went less chalky with my other two Final Four picks. And I think UVA and Florida State of the ACC, while only 4 seeds, they're pretty good basketball teams. I just remind people when they're doing their brackets, almost 90% of the time, the national champion comes from the top 3 seed lines. So going in, that's 12 teams for a total, right? 4 ones, 4 twos, and 4 threes. Almost 90% of, we love talking about Cinderella, and sometimes Cinderella gets to the Final Four, but there aren't many glass slippers to go around when it comes to the national title. And I think Gonzaga and Illinois are the two to watch, but man, there's a lot of others worth watching as potential dark horses. Oklahoma State's going to be fun to watch with Cade Cunningham. Texas Tech is another interesting team that we've seen. They're not as good this year, but it's and I'll give you an 11 seed. I think Syracuse out of the ACC has a chance to make the Sweet 16. I like Syracuse's road better than I like a 4 seed like Virginia's road, or a Carolina would have to beat a really good Wisconsin team and then a really good Baylor team. So you could like the Tar Heels and still think they're not going to make the Sweet 16 because of their path. I think Syracuse is playing its best basketball at exactly the right time. And that Jim Boeheim guy has taken some other teams that barely made the tournament and went a long way. So maybe he has some magic along those lines again.
No doubt. It's going to be great, especially the whole Indianapolis thing. And the state of Indiana playing all the games. What are your thoughts on that? I was going to talk about that. So we'll go ahead now that Kyle mentioned the tournament. How do you like that?
Well, I think it's one of those, like you see on the wall of a hotel, break glass in case of emergency. This was a break glass in case of emergency scenario, putting everybody in the greater Indianapolis area, because it would have been too risky to do it a different way. And these guys are in lockdown. Now, I'm fascinated, Dave, to see how young men, 18 to 22 years old, for the most part, they're not leaving the single floor of their single hotel. So if your hotel's having Wi-Fi problems that day, you know, these guys are already tweeting about it and going crazy. They don't get to see many people. In a case like Virginia, which has been on COVID lockdown, would you believe the Cavaliers have not practiced in 8 days? They have not had a single basketball practice in 8 days heading into the most important games of their season. So how is that going to play out? We don't know, because we've never seen it during March Madness before. How is this Indianapolis setting going to play out? We don't know. How are these kids going stir crazy going to play out? We don't know. We've already seen some of the best officials in the game sent home because of COVID contact tracing. That's not a fun storyline to follow, as much as people complain about the refs already. It's a guessing game. Will it be those heavyweights I talked about, or will we get some March Madness chaos just since everything else in our world has been so upside down for the last 12 months? I don't know, but I'm glad the NCAA took this approach. I certainly wouldn't want to see it this way in a normal year, but it right. minimizes the risk of us having to, you know, have buys during the NCAA tournament when one team can't show up. That's what we had at the ACC tournament. The number one reason I didn't think Georgia Tech could win the ACC title? They don't have any depth. If you don't have any depth, I don't think you can win three games in 3 days because those young men's bodies are used to playing on a Wednesday and then on a Sunday with plenty of time in between. Well, guess what? Georgia Tech didn't need to win three games in 3 days, as it turned out, because UVA had to forfeit. So they only had to win on a Thursday and then on a Saturday. And credit to them for doing it. I'm not trying to take away from their championship. But that doesn't change the dynamic a little bit. That changed the dynamic a lot. Nice. And we'll see. I hope there are no such scenarios in the big bracket. They're not going to have replacement teams, remember. So if your opponent can't field a team, you're on to the next round. Even if you're a 16 and it's the one seed that has to step aside.
That's just so bizarre, but I guess they were not willing to push the tournament back as I had wanted to May, spreading out the games. But, you know, I understand it's a logistical nightmare now when you have from that standpoint, if you're an administrator at a university where you have all the fall sports and all the spring sports are pretty much, and then you have basketball that's pretty much like a winter sport. You have all those sports playing at the same time. And then with FBS, you have a situation where you have spring football going on starting right now, or it's already begun. So there's all these factors that are going on. I thought it was funny. One of the guys for East Carolina hit a home run, and the guys were on the spring football. They were on the practice fields, and they see the ball come and right there on their practice field. So a lot of crazy stuff happening there. That's maybe a normal situation, but I know situations right now where one of my dear friends at my alma mater here locally at the high school level, they're going through a lot, because if you have a situation with, like me, coming from a 1A school, every single kid has to play. They have a lot of – I can't even – there's so many sports at Williamston, where I live, Riverside High School. They even have golf. I mean, they have so many sports they field every single year, and they've never been in this situation before. I haven't even called – I need to catch up with the – athletic director has been on the show before, Phil Woolard. I don't know how he's sleeping at night knowing that they're playing football right now. You have basketball, you have baseball, you have all these sports all at the same time. And getting back to my point, in a real world, a perfect world, maybe you could push March Madness to make it like May Madness or something like that. But the real world, that's not reality because you have all these sports going on.
Yeah, it's trickier. There are a lot of good ideas that when you start to apply them, they can fall apart. How are the NBA prospects going to handle May Madness if, you know, their school might finish its semester the first day of May, right?
Right.
And then they're technically done with their academic year. I mean, I know baseball players deal with this all the time, but basketball players don't. So how would they have reacted to that? I don't know. This was making the best of a disaster scenario. So there were alternatives and they were all discussed, but I'm like you, I'm just crossing my fingers that we see games and not forfeits between now and somebody cutting down the nets.
And let me ask you this question. As far as this weekend is the most challenging one with the number of games. And of course, 67 games, those of us who love college basketball, this is like basketball on steroids. One of my favorite times of the year. But after this weekend, can they move the games around? They have more flexibility, right? Because you have, after this weekend, it's down to 16 teams. So you can move the games around or push it back a day or two, couldn't you?
You could. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to handle that. I'm not sure they've announced how they might handle that.
Okay.
I think they're reserving the right to be a little flexible. But it's funny, to your original point, It is mathematically true. Everybody thinks this is a punchline when somebody says it, but it is mathematically true given what you described as these early days of the NCAA tournament. And I share your appreciation for those days. It's wall-to-wall basketball, right? I mean, in a normal year, you can tune in at noon and pretty much go 12-plus consecutive hours seeing basketball for those first 2 days. It is mathematically true that the number of vasectomies scheduled in the day leading into the early days of the NCAA tournament, and I personally, I'm not joking when I say this, I once asked my dentist who told me that I needed my wisdom teeth out. I said, how long after you get your wisdom teeth out are you coherent enough to watch a television program? And he said, well, it depends. You know, you'd either want to do the surgery the day before or you'd want to do it really early in the morning so you'd be coherent enough to watch something by the afternoon. And I said, and I also said, does it matter when? Is this an emergency? What, does it matter when I get my wisdom teeth out? And he said, no, just do it in the next few months. So I looked up the calendar and I picked the day right before the Thursday start of an NCAA tournament so that, you know, my wife felt like she had to take care of me, right? Instead of being mad that I was watching 24 hours of basketball, I was recovering, right? I was technically a patient.
Smart.
So she's kind of my nursemaid. I'm kind of doing work, but I got a difficult surgery out of the way. And the 2 days I was supposed to recover, I had the remote control in my hand and a beautiful wife that happened to be my nurse. So that was one heck of a story way back when.
No doubt about it. As far as after the tournament goes with things financially speaking, I know we've mentioned that they, of course, had to do the tournament this year because of the Olympic sports. Just want to get your thoughts. East Carolina's going through a tough time. They're going to bounce back. I really believe that a lot of these schools will eventually bounce back. Is there anything the NCAA can do outside of the, obviously, the basketball tournament? Everybody watching this knows and listening, the basketball tournament pays for a lot of the Olympic sports for their seasons and helps out. Is there anything the NCAA can do to help out? I know the American, we had, there was a press conference on Sunday with Commissioner Mike Oresko from the American. The American has helped out their partner schools, the member schools. Is there anything generically the whole NCAA can do to help out, say if it's East Carolina or any other school in the nation when it comes to financial help?
Well, one thing they did was to at least minimize the big blow that everybody took last year was they did have a pretty good insurance policy. So even though the NCAA tournament was not played, and for those who don't know, it's about almost a billion dollars a year. I mean, that is one heck of a line item in your annual budget. They missed out, of course, on that billion, but they collected several hundred million because of an insurance policy. They also have emergency funds. I'm not aware in detail exactly how it's almost like a rainy day fund that a family might keep as a nest egg in case of job loss or, you know, a medical emergency or whatever. The NCAA does have that as well. But there's no, you know, even some of those things require, you know, being paid back. So I'm not aware of any magic wand, you know, to make these financial issues go away. And you're right. It's the mid-sized schools and the smaller schools that have been hit really, really hard because some of the wealthier schools have tapped into their rainy day fund to try to get them through these times. And some of these other schools just don't have much of a rainy day fund.
That very thing is that people are going to just have to find a way to, I think, be patient. And we're going to have to deal with, it's not great to be in deficit spending. Don't talk to the federal government about that. But as far as the college is concerned, they're just going to have to deal with the next year or two being in a deficit because it's going to take some time. For example, for all the people that say they're Pirate fans, make sure you get your shot because we want you in Dowdy Ficklin. I wanted to talk to you about one of the things before we let you go. I appreciate your time tonight a lot. Is the very fact of the capacity. I heard, I don't know if this is true, so I'm going to say it's a rumor. That they are going to, I heard this last week, that hopefully if things continue to go the way they are, that we'll be at 50% capacity. If that is true, That bodes well for those of us in the fall that want to see us somewhat close to back to normalcy when it comes to Dowdy Ficklin, if it's Keenan Stadium, if it's Carter Finley, if it's Wallace Wade, what if it's in Boone, wherever it is, we'd love to see the numbers go back up as far as college football.
Yeah, and I think there's a good chance of it unfolding that way. As they always say, you know, they reserve the right to change their mind. And vaccines are going into arms at a pretty good rate right now, as you mentioned earlier. Hospitalizations and other indicators in a lot of the country also have been going down. It varies from place to place, obviously. But that's a very realistic scenario, the way it's been described to me, that some people are describing it. Athletic directors who are optimistic are saying, we believe it's going to be 50%. And if trends are good enough and there are enough vaccines and there's enough of a green light from the CDC and other federal authorities, that maybe you can even inch higher than 50%. But you know how it is. We're talking in the month of March. They're going to reevaluate this in the month of May. And then they don't really have to make a decision about college football season until right there in August. So who knows? By August, it could be a really rosy picture. We could have, you know, there are entire nations like Italy that thought they were gaining momentum and then took five steps backward. I certainly hope that's not the case with us, and I don't think it will be. So it's a guessing game. That's what it is right now. And you and I could be talking on August 1st, and we still might not be 100% sure of what the rules are going to be. And that's hard on these schools because they want to sell season tickets, right? People don't wait until August 31st to decide, you know, whether they're going to buy season tickets. So it's complicated. It's alienated a lot of fans. You know, why is that person getting to renew his or her season ticket?
Right.
But I'm not high enough on the list. The greater the capacity, the less hurt feelings there are among these fan bases. And right now, you know it. These athletic departments need all of their fans to be at their most loyal because financially speaking, they need them as much as they've ever needed them.
And DG, if you were doing your statewide show, one of the games you'd be talking about in late August, Labor Day weekend, there's a huge game with App State. I think it's the home game in East Carolina at Bank of America Stadium. That is going to be a huge game. And I really want to, I know that it may not be 74,000 people there because of normal times, ticket prices, that sort of thing. But that Thursday night game is going to be one of the first games for the 21 season.
Yeah.
And with two proud fan bases, in-state rival, in a great city with a lot of things to do, I really believe I'll be one of many people there. And I'm hoping that we can be great that day, that night.
I have covered a lot of games in Charlotte, college football games at Bank of America Stadium. And it's one of my most fun things to do, whether it's been these ACC football title games or some of those intersectional games, you know, South Carolina is representing the SEC and a North Carolina or an NC State or a Virginia Tech is representing the ACC. The Belk Bowl, of course, is another example of that. It's just a blast. And in this particular case, you're right. It's the proud program in the western part of our state against the proud program in the eastern part of our state. And they don't meet each other all that often, but they both have famously passionate fan bases in football. So those are two colors that I don't get to see collide very often. And it happens to be where my son is in school against where my daughter is in school.
Oh, so, my gosh.
So you got an extra layer of complexity for us at the Glenn family.
So does that mean DG will be going for one team and the lovely and talented Maria will be going for another? Y'all split.
It's funny. John Grisham, the legal thriller author, is married to a Carolina girl, but lives in Charlottesville, Virginia, and sent his own son to play baseball at UVA. So when UVA played Carolina at the Smith Center, where John Grisham and his wife have season tickets, his joke was that he rooted for Mississippi State, which was his legal alma mater, because he didn't want to alienate either the Cavalier fans or his wife or his son or the Tar Heel fans that he sat near every year. So he just kind of took a pass on the whole thing. Well, he watched the game. He was there. but he just wasn't rooting for anybody. I'm not sure how I'm going to handle that. We'll see. At that point, Anthony will be a graduate of ECU, and Avery will be a sophomore at App State. But yeah, we're neck deep in both of those. You'll see a lot of those colors all over the Glenn household right now. So I'll have to do more thinking about exactly how we're going to handle that.
No doubt. And I saved the toughest question for you for last before we let you go. And that is, any updates on where we can hear you? We had Richard Allsburg, for those just tuning in and listening. We had Richard Allsburg, who was obviously a fan of East Carolina, fan of our show and fan of the DG show, wanting to know where you're going. Have you had any, I know you're, it's a tough time right now financially with these institutions as far as the media is concerned. Have you had any more progress where we can hear you every single day or more than one, maybe once a week?
I can tell you that I've told all the people that are my partners, part-time partners or long-time partners in some cases, I want to figure things out by August of this year. In other words, right now, I love teaching at UNC Wilmington and getting experience in the academic world, which I think is going to remain part of what I do. You know me. I've been a lawyer. I've been a writer. I'm an editor. I've been a business owner. I'm a radio host. So I wear a lot of hats, and I want to keep wearing a lot of hats, and I want university level teaching to be a new hat that I keep. But in terms of radio and writing, I'm talking to The Athletic about the possibility of kind of returning to my roots. Most people think of me first as a radio guy and second as a writer and an editor. In my 20s, I was a writer and an editor and an attorney, and I was secondarily a radio guy. So my career kind of got turned upside down. So in a good way, I'm happy about it. The Athletic and I are talking about the possibility of me being more 80% writer and editor and 20% podcaster. So it would be the flip back to what I was doing as a younger man. That's just one possibility. Syndicating a radio show right now is really, really challenging financially. And I can't say that I'm optimistic about rebooting a statewide version of my show right now. I wish, if I was optimistic, I would share that with you. It's not a closed door, but given that a lot of my potential partners have lost millions of dollars, some of them are just hesitant to try something new. Or different along those lines. So I'm doing some things outside of sports, in politics and in law. I'm an investor in an energy company that I help with communications and public relations. So those are more hats I'm wearing. But I don't know. I think when we chat again next time, maybe I'll have more updates. But for now, I'm still exploring everything. And I'm actually glad that I told everybody months ago, I really don't want my next thing in sports media until this coming August. And that gives them time to recover financially. It gives me time to explore all these other things. And, if I jump back in, it'll be in the month of August, which January starts the calendar year. But I've always thought that August starts the sports year because the NFL is back. College football is back. You know, other sports are heading into the playoffs. Baseball's, really ramping up, et cetera. So we'll see. But I probably won't have clarity on that until a couple months down the road.
And those of you know DG, he's got to have a sabbatical. You got to have your sabbatical in July anyway, right?
Yes,
so it's
true.
A kind of continuation of the sabbatical. And then by August coming back, you'll be good to go.
I've always taken as much of July off, even under normal circumstances, as I possibly could. And way back in the day, one of the coolest contracts I ever signed, I was a sports radio host for 8 months out of the year. And then I was allowed to disappear and do other things for 4 months and then resurface in August to start a new eight-month cycle. That contract didn't last too many years, but, man, I loved it while I had it.
No doubt. We appreciate you so much and look forward to having you back on. And certainly, I tell you what, wherever you go, it's going to be fantastic. There's a lot of people that will follow you. I had another idea, but I know I'll tell you later about that. I don't think it would ever work, but I have my ideas, as you know, and some are good and some are bad, but thank you. Thank you so much, my friend. Appreciate it. And I look forward to having you back on real soon.
Always great to be with you, Dave. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right, DG there, as we have a lot of fun talking to him, talking, of course, everything tonight. We appreciate you so much. Obviously, Bubba is actually Team Disney right now, so producing behind the scenes is me, and he helped out tonight some. Bubba, thank you so much, my friend. By the way, we went along with DG, but we have the coach, Steve Holm. We have that interview up, and we'll have that for you. You can find that on YouTube, of course, Facebook. A lot of places will have that up, and that's, of course, the head coach of Illinois State as they come in to take on the Pirates. It'll be this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so make sure that you check that out. Illinois State, a really good program. They won the Missouri Valley 2 years ago. In fact, I was so close to being right. I was wrong, but Louisville, they had Louisville on the ropes, and they could have done that, and then East Carolina would have been hosting its first ever super regional in Greenville, and it almost happened, but it didn't. And but anyway, we'll talk to I had a chance to sit down with him this week as they get ready. The Pirates are going to be taking hopefully can bounce back against the Redbirds. We'll see how that takes place. And we appreciate all that they do as far as college baseball is concerned. We appreciate the Pirates and we appreciate Illinois State. A lot of great coaches come on our show. You can't always say that about every single sport. But we appreciate the time with Coach Holm. Want to give a shout out to pgxgloves.com as they look out for us. And I want to thank them for helping us with my very own son, Alexander. pgxgloves.com. They have custom baseball gloves. They have batting gloves, personalized stuff, youth football gloves. I have my golf shirt on right now. They have golf gloves, swag, a lot of cool stuff. Make sure that you check out them. Want to give a shout out to Next Level. We're talking ECU baseball right now, so I want to give them a hello to Trent, Brett, and Gaynell. Brett, they have been really good to this show and really good to the podcast, and we appreciate them very much. Go to nextleveltc.com, nextleveltc.com, and you can find out all the information on. And also, they have a great Facebook page. I'll have to check that out tonight. I used to look at that every day or two, but they have a lot of cool stuff up there about former players and current players and what they're up to. And we appreciate them so much. All right, coming up Sunday night at 7, it is going to be Extra Innings brought to you by Next Level. We'll have Corey Glore. We'll have him on, and we'll have your comments and suggestions, maybe whatever you'd like to talk about that. And we'll do that and so much more. Thanks to David Glenn, our great guest. We want to thank also Bubba Rosenbaum once again, behind the scenes, making a little bit of a cameo, and also Kyle Barber being in the first half of the show. Thank you very much. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.